Welcome to the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com.
Welcome back, y'all. I'm Steve Abramowitz, and this is the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. Welcome to our People in the News, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with special guest Stephen Hayes, another Steve show for the library, which you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast platforms, and Rumble Video. Don't forget Rumble. Stephen L. Hayes graduated with honors from the University of Arkansas and the University of San Francisco Law School. Whoa, those are very different places to graduate from. I'll ask about that. As a self-described recovering tax attorney, he spent considerable time and resources investigating alternatives to the income tax. Based on his research, including interviewing tax practitioners, business owners, employees, and economists, he determined the best solution was to eliminate the income tax and the IRS and replace them with a national retail sales tax collected by the states. This is April, folks. How'd you like this year's filings, right? So perfect time to talk about it. In 1990, Mr. Hayes joined the joined and became president of Citizens for Alternative Tax System, CATS, CATS, which was the first organization dedicated to the idea of replacing the federal income tax with a national sales tax. He was also instrumental in forming the Florida Fair Tax Educational Association, Inc., FFETA, and currently serves as the FFETA Board of Directors on it. Hayes has appeared on hundreds of radio and television shows, had numerous articles published in newspapers and magazines, making my job easier coming up with questions that sound smart. And he regularly speaks to groups of citizens around the country about why we must eliminate the income tax and the IRS and replace them with a national retail sales tax. Hello, Chairman Hayes. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Steve.
Do you, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Do you often get confused with Stephen, with a PH Hayes, the economist on TV a lot too?
I often have to correct that when people ask me, how do you spell your name again?
We're all the V's.
You have a similar situation.
On this show, we are the three V's. You got it. Okay. So on December 6, 2023, not long ago, AFFT chairman and FFTEA board member Steve Hayes was invited to give testimony in Washington in front of the House Ways and Means Subcommittee on the policies to expand growth and increase prosperity for American families.
Yes.
Did you get the impression they listened to you? Because here we are near the end of the 2024 session and we are broker and spending continues with a bigger omnibus than even Pelosi had.
I think there were a couple of people that listened. It was interesting to me, Steve, that because I've done this before, but it's back in the 90s when I testified. And I naively sort of assumed it would be the same way when they would make a comment, they would on both sides of the aisle and ask you a question. Well, I was sitting next to a gentleman who was from the Brookings Urban Institute, which is a rather liberal group. He had no clue about tax reform or anything, but he was over there. And the minority member from California who came after the chairman, he started attacking me. It was a far right wing proposal and it was like a waste of time, you know, from the beginning, but he did not let me respond. And then the Republicans, for the most part, did not really even ask me any questions. They talked about the 2017 tax cuts and how much benefit it was. There were some exceptions. The Democrats, there were a couple of exceptions that most of them would criticize the fair tax and then ask the person to my left to do nothing about it to comment. So it was like a scripted put down. But it was funny because Jason Smith, who's the chairman of the whole committee, this is a subcommittee, apparently, and he's the one that invited me, his staff probably said, hey, Hayes is getting picked on pretty bad because he's not given a chance to respond. Smith shows up unexpected. Nobody expected him. But of course, since he's the chairman, he can take over speaking, and he opened the door up for me to respond to some of the more outrageous statements that had been made.
Wow.
But I got the feeling that all they really wanted were sound bites for their coming campaign.
Yeah. That's the way they operate up there. Sorry they wasted your time. We have whistleblowers with more urgent life and death things that have said the same and similar to that. Coming out of it, you said Senate Republicans are abandoning successful pro-growth conservative economic policies if they fail to act. Conservative Republicans have every reason to support the Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act. Over 40 conservative and free market organizations have urged lawmakers to pass the pro-growth legislation. Other organizations and leaders from across the conservative movement have strongly backed the bill. At the same time, far-left Democrats, including Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat Massachusetts, and Rep. Rosa DeLauro, wow, that woman's interesting, Democrat from Connecticut, have railed against this legislation. Quote, "If GOP senators want to save their signature economic success of the past decade, they must get to yes on this tax reform," end quote. How do you feel five, 6 months later?
Well, it's, I wasn't so naive that I didn't think that most of them could care less, because what you've got up there is a lot of people, and in fairness to members of Congress, they have so many things that they're supposed to be taking a look at. Not only things in their district, on the committees they're on, but they're supposed to know everything about everything. And obviously they can't, so they have staff members advising them. And you've run into this, Steve. A lot of the staff on both sides, I make sort of a comment, they haven't had a job in the private sector since they were babysitting in high school, or they were mowing lawns. That's been their experience with private sector, because most of them came out of college, went to college, came out of college, went to work for a nonprofit, the government, a university, whatever, and they've been somewhat in a bubble all the way through. And I have a suspicion that you saw the Rasmussen poll of elites, where he pointed out that an elite, as he defined it, was making over 150,000 a year. They were educated at one of eight co universities, not colleges, universities. They lived in a metropolitan area. And basically, the conclusion that he came away from, and these people agreed to be interviewed. I watched an interview with him. They agreed to be interviewed, and they were really quite proud of the fact that they were more intelligent than everybody else. And therefore, they should be the ones listened to. And it was interesting that almost 70% of the politically active elite, some of them were not that politically active, but of the politically active, said that it was okay to cheat to win an election if it was going to be for your side. 70%. I mean, the nationwide number is like 6-7%, and nobody really knows where that comes from, but 70%. And these are people, primarily from the Democrats, but also Republicans, advising members. And they don't want something like we're proposing. The national retail sales tax says you don't file any tax returns, you don't file any income tax returns. You have no IRS. And they really, a lot of the elites see making you file and changing the rules every year to make you have to spend time doing it. Having the IRS, those are real benefits, because they want to help the people that they believe deserve help. In other words, in their infinite wisdom. And they want to discourage the people who they don't believe are doing the right things. And they can't do that with a retail sales tax, because it applies to everyone. You and I, not them, decide how much tax we pay by how much we spend.
Yeah, we'll get
And
into that in a minute here too, but I mean, those are the new age whiz kids that Reagan and Nixon detested so much because they were in their ivory towers. And one of these days, those exact elites might realize that their jobs are so much easier when the economy is strong and voters are
Right.
happy. But if they don't care about voters, I saw something recently too where almost none of them come from blue collar jobs. So
Right.
Citadel founder Ken Griffin told investors recently that he expects moderate economic growth in upcoming quarters. This could be solved with tax policy, but he cited the US national debt as a growing concern that cannot be overlooked. Janet Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, and Griffin and many others have been out with debt concerns. I guess 34 trillion was the number that finally
Over
woke them
34
up.
now. Yes.
Yeah, 33 trillion apparently we were cool with. What are your thoughts on America and the $313 trillion in 2023 global debt load? I don't even want to know what it is now.
Well, if you've got a situation where, and I think a lot of it comes from modern monetary theory. You may have run across that, but it was actually back in the early 1900s. And the theory has been that you don't have to worry about deficits. You can have as high a deficit as you want. And as long as you're using the money primarily for infrastructure and for the quote public good, as defined by the elites, it's okay. And the purposes of taxes is not really to raise revenue. It's simply to control inflation. In other words, by taking money out of the economy, it reduces the ability of people to spend too much and therefore drive inflation, with the debt. So you got a lot of people that honestly, in their heart of hearts, don't believe that the federal deficit is like a deficit that you and I might have. They believe that you can print the money, in fact, not really print it, but create the money by putting money in an account and saying it's not, it's there by the Fed, and that there are no consequences. Well, that's obviously being proven wrong because all of this money they poured into the economy, and Trump did as well. He put in that first stimulus. All the money Biden's poured in, inflation went to what, 9%? Because you had so much money chasing less products.
Double
And so
digits,
inflation.
double digits on a lot of other things, but yeah, I guess
Yeah.
nine average, yeah.
And so, and what happened was that you had this inflation. The Fed said, wait, why is there inflation? We've been letting deficit spending go on for all this time, and we never had it. Starting with Reagan, we've let it go on all this time, and we really haven't had this inflation. It's the highest interest rates we've had in 25 years, all of these things. And they were just like shocked. I mean, you could see it when the chairman gave one of his addresses. It was totally unprepared for it. And they came back then and they said, okay, we're going to take action. And fortunately, from an inflation point of view, they did. They raised rates from zero, up to where we're now talking 4.5, 5%. And you did see demand go down. Now, the ironic thing, Steve, which always irritates me, and I'm sure you, is that even though these, I'm going to say it, morons in DC, the elites, caused the problem, we're the ones that are supposed to bear the brunt of fixing it. And how are we
Always.
going to do that? We're going to have higher interest rates. Like the average family buying a home is going to pay $12,000 more this year than they would have paid 4 years ago because of interest rates going up. The national debt, the interest on it, used to be under 1% for a 10-year bond. We're going to hit 5% probably in the next auction. We're 4.6 now. So we're talking about a situation where all of this is going to spiral more and more out of control, and the interest on the debt is going to become more and more of the budget because only 20% is discretionary. The rest of
Yeah, we
it's entitlement.
pay more than more on interest per year than we do on the defense and NASA combined. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens, honestly, Steve, is that I don't believe ordinary Americans, they've counted on this, really understand. But if they start to really understand that they're paying as much as 50% and sometimes more for food, for energy, for gas than they were 4 years ago. And they say, wait a minute, Biden is telling us that the economy is getting better, it's improving, we're all doing better. And it's like that old story, you know, you're going to believe me or your lying eyes. Because when they go to the store, they see absolutely that lettuce used to be, you know, $1 a head, and now it's $3 or $2.50 or whatever. And they buy a thing of Oreos and they find there's less cookies in the package. Same price, but less cookies. And so you've
Shrinkflation,
got a
yeah.
situation where people, even though the elites think so, we're not that stupid. We are actually
They're
seeing.
starting to hit the pocketbook. Yep, they can't
That's
hide
right.
this. You know, Bloomberg Economics ran a 1 million forecast simulation. I think they probably could have just run one and asked you, but on the US debt outlook, 88% of them show borrowing on an unsustainable path. Is it time to remind everyone of Margaret Thatcher's adage, socialism fails because you run out of other people's money? A debt slave is not far from a wage slave, right?
Well, no, it's very close. I mean, look at the people that you and I both have known who charged up everything on credit cards and they made minimum payments. Pretty soon, the minimum payments became more than their rent. And they ended up having to do a workout, go bankrupt, or whatever. This is a similar situation we're talking about with the government. And the reason it's been so low in terms of how to finance our debt is largely because a lot of foreign buyers felt like it was a safe place to put money. They would put money over here, even though it was a low rate, because it was safe compared to the other economies in the world. All right. That is rapidly changing. The number of foreign buyers coming to these auctions has been going down for the last year and a half. And we're going to come to a point where it becomes increasingly the US, you know, the Fed itself buying its own treasuries back, which is a real Ponzi scheme. Or we're going to get US investors and banks and others buying it. And what's that going to do? That means that when you and I go out to buy a car, and we're going to finance the payments, we're going to be competing with what the bank could get from the Fed, guaranteed from the trade, you know, from the Treasury. Whereas you and I may not pay. They may have to come back and get the car. So it's going to be several points above whatever they can buy, you know, at the Treasury. So we are directly, as individuals, competing. That's why home mortgages are up so much. And that's for a moderate house, a $350,000 house. If you're finding one of those in many, well, you're in Tennessee. I understand from friends of mine that live in Tennessee, the prices have just skyrocketed to buy a home. So you could be paying $20,000 or $30,000 a year more out of your personal family income to pay on that home than you would have 4 years ago.
I said 34 trillion today. The rule of 72 says in 10 years it's double to 64.
Yes.
Unsustainable any way you slice it. A
Yes.
million more, $1 million mortgage today at 7%. You paid $1 million in 10 years. I don't think people want to do that.
No.
How does this affect this coming 2024 general election, as well as what's happening in Florida, where you are and where you've already been successful? I didn't tell anybody, but you are located in Clearwater, Florida.
Right. The Tampa Bay area. Yes, we are. Well, let's go back to the election. I think that it's based on the polls. Now, the polls are going to change 50 times between now and November. But one of the big issues is the fact that most people are seeing with their own eyes a problem here. They're seeing that things are going up. They're seeing that they can't afford to buy a home. because of the payments. They're seeing that there's lots of other problems, like with immigration. It's shown up as a major issue on a lot of the primaries that have been done when they do the polling afterwards. That was an issue. Who would do a better job? At this point, the Republicans are saying it, but you've got an immigration policy that no matter how much people were negative on Obama, Biden is doing roughly three times as many illegal immigrants coming to the border, and three times as many who are not caught. An estimate, how do you know you didn't catch them? It's like, how do you do a negative? But an estimate of three times as many. And he's also created, which most people don't even know about, but if you get on this government app, it's CTB or whatever it was, I can't remember, I read about it, and you're an immigrant that would not qualify, you may be able to get what's called a parole. And he's giving 30,000 of those a month. So somebody that has a cell phone goes on this app and applies. And if they get accepted, they come over here and they can get a social security number. They can go to work. A lot of states use your social security number to prove you can vote. So you're going to have a lot of people who are not citizens, but are ineligible to vote because they have a social security. They get it legally. I'm not saying that they're cheating on it. It's Biden's program. But you've got a lot of problems at the border. And ironically, Steve, we need more immigrants. We don't have enough birth rate. It's like 1.6 now. It's down in the last 20 years from over almost 3 now to 1.6. And we're talking about a situation where we need workers, but we don't need dependents workers. We need people who are going to be able to work and get jobs. And look, my grandparents came from Ireland and they had zip. And they came and they worked and they made it. There were no government programs. So it was like survival of the fittest, but they made it work. So I'm not in any way anti-immigrant, but I think we have laws that should be enforced, and I think that's going to affect the election in a
I've
lot of
actually
ways. People
heard
are upset.
one of the theories on tamping down inflation, why it isn't like wildfire, since the printing has been wildfire, is immigration. Flood the system with people to absorb those new dollars. It can't stop inflation, but it can slow it down. Any credibility to that?
I think there's a little bit, but remember, these are typically the lowest spending part of our society. And many of them are not able to work, so they're not buying anything. You've got these people there, I'm sure you saw the headline. I think it was in New York. They're going to put them in million-dollar condos or what that are empty. I mean, you've got a lot of people being housed and fed by the city, state, whoever, is handling it. So I think there's probably not, but the actual thing I believe economists will agree has been cushioning what the Fed really believes is going to be a recession. I mean, you look at Powell and you read what he said. He was trying to get you ready for last year for a recession by this summer. And he was throwing all these things out and how it wouldn't be that long if it happened and all these different things. But a lot of it's been stopped because we've got that huge increase in credit card debt. We've got the highest credit card debt we've ever had, 1.3 trillion, I believe. We've got the highest default rate we've ever had. And we're going to have a point where, even though a lot of people said, well, if I don't buy it today, particularly back when it was 9% inflation, if I don't buy that $10,000 item today, it's going to be 11,000 next year. It's sort of like Weimar Republic. They take their wheelbarrow full of money and run to the bakery
Yeah, that's we're trying to
to beat
avoid
it.
that, hopefully.
Yeah. But that's, go ahead, sorry.
Never before have so many different voices place the spotlight on taxes on vast fortunes at the same time, in my observation. They're hoping to make this one of the hot topics of the international debate in a climate of growing inequality when many countries need more resources to tackle major challenges, including people. The immense debt accumulated due to the COVID-19 pandemic, coupled with the ecological transition, this Green New Deal, digitization, and aging populations. Elizabeth Warren, Senator from Massachusetts, not an American Indian, Ted Kennedy's old seat, is leading the way. What are you seeing in this pressure campaign for a wealth tax?
I think the Moore case, which is going to be decided sometime this summer, where the IRS in the 2017 Act went back 30 years to assess tax that they claimed was earned, even though it wasn't distributed. The Moores had invested in an Indian company that provided implements for low-income farmers. And the idea was never to make a profit. It was simply to help perpetuate providing tools very inexpensively. It wasn't nonprofit, it was for profit, but it never paid a dividend. Any money it made, it went back into providing more tools, keeping the prices down. Well, they've been assessed, and one of the arguments that's been made at the Supreme Court is that the definition of when you tax income, and the most aggressive definition is when you receive it. The definition that the IRS and most of the elites want is it can be at any time. You don't have to actually recognize it to be taxed. So, and the argument is, Steve, that your home, let's say you've had a home 10 years, it's appreciated in value, 100%. You bought it for, I'm going to make this up, 300, and now it's worth 600. That's a gain of 300,000. And the idea is that they should be able to tax that gain currently. And you're going to say, wait a minute, I'm going to pay 20% tax on $360,000. Where am I going to get it? Well, you could add a second mortgage, okay? I mean, this is the logic. If you read some of these amicus briefs, I'm being a little outlandish, but it's not far. And what they're trying to do, this is the establishing of the wealth tax, say you can tax income anytime I want to. Because, Steve, if you can't pay the tax, you can sell your house. Obviously, you could sell your, and the fact that you're not selling it means you're not paying the tax that we need in our coffers. I mean, that's really the logic. And that's behind the wealth tax. We can assess a tax based on what we believe to be the correct assessment of your income. And
Well,
it
I
can be
mean,
every
living in
year.
your house is not your income. It's actually quite
No,
a bit
but
of
no, but
outgo. I've been
actually,
a homeowner. It's expensive.
economically, it is because you have the value of a place to live. So, from an economist point of view, that rental offset is income to you.
I'm earning my living quarters, basically.
Yes. Yeah. You're
Wow.
basically
Okay.
getting your living quarters by there.
That's a bit torturous, I would
It's
say. I
very
hope.
torturous, but I'm just telling you the way some of these these papers read.
I agree.
And
I understand. Very confusing.
yeah, and so the reason why I believe it's so important to start taking away some of their power and frankly getting rid of the income tax, the payroll tax, and going to the retail sales tax takes away an enormous amount of their power because they can't tell you that if you invest in solar, we'll let you have a tax credit. But if you give money to your church, unless you itemize, you can't deduct it. They
Oh, you
can't
can
make those
deduct it.
decisions for us.
Yeah.
We make those decisions for ourselves. We
Wow.
decide where we want to invest. We
Starting to
decide.
revolutionary these days, so
Oh my
that's
gosh, it's like saying that you and I are adults, that we actually know how to handle our money. The elites
Yeah.
don't think so.
The whiz
They
kids
really
don't like
don't.
that. Okay, so fairtax.org with Jim Bennett and John, is it Grafer, Grafer?
Grayford.
Grayford, tell us about Fairtax and your partners there.
Well, we've got a number of dedicated people. Fairtax.org is AFFT's Americans for Fair Taxation website, because we're promoting a bill called the Fair Tax. And it's a 23% internal rate and a 30% external rate. Like, for example, you go to the store like you would your state sales tax, and you buy a, I don't know, a $5 item. Okay. In Tennessee, you'd pay a state sales tax, and you would pay 30% federal sales tax. Okay. Sounds really high, but everybody in America gets a tax exemption, basically, where, as an example, a family of four can make purchases of $40,000 a year and pay no fair tax. So all the fair tax they're paying is on top of it. So let's take that family of four, and let's say they're spending $50,000. It's only on new goods now. How many family of fours that make $50,000 buy brand new cars? Because used cars aren't taxed. Their payments will not be taxed. Or new houses. Okay, you're talking about a situation where they can control their tax by how much and where they spend it. But they're only going to be taxed on 30% on that extra $10,000, assuming they paid tax on everything. Does that make sense? 40,000 is tax free. They spent 50. They'd pay that tax on the extra 10. If they're working and they're making 50,000, what are they going to pay in Social Security tax today?
That's like six.
7.65% of 50,
Okay.
right? About
Yeah.
$3,700. They're paying $700 more today than they would under the fair tax for the same amount of income. And if they spend more on used goods and it goes down below 40,000, they don't pay any fair tax. Zero. But it's up to them. We're actually saying we're going to let those people run their own lives, just like we're going to let us run our own lives.
So today is April 25th. We are 10 days past filing deadline for most
Right.
people, also known as Tax Day. The Fair Tax Act, referred to as Fair Tax, Fairtax, was introduced to the U.S. Congress in 1999 by former Rep. John Linder, Republican from Georgia, of course. And it stands as the foremost tax reform plan in the nation. The Fair Tax Act has been proposed as a bill in the United States Congress regularly since 1999. It was last proposed as H.R. 25 in January of 2023. This Fair Tax Act imposes a national sales tax on taxable new property or services instead of the current income tax, payroll taxes, and estate and gift taxes. So, where are we with this 25-year overnight sensation? Do you think we have a chance this next year of getting it passed finally?
I think we do. Not next year necessarily, but well, let me back up. If Biden's reelected, no chance. Because it absolutely goes against everything he believes in turn, and frankly, I'm not sure how much he believes in anything anymore, but his advisors believe in. It's
Believes in ghosts.
firmly, yeah, the people who are actually running a lot of what he does. They're elites. They want to control everything. Why would they want to give you the right to control your own taxes? Now, if Trump gets elected, there's a different thing that can happen. Some of his, let's say, people who were closest to him before are fair tax supporters.
Nice.
And I think there's a good chance that we'll be able to meet with him. He'll be on his last term. He hates the IRS. He hates the income tax. Even though he, like almost all the other very wealthy people, have it licked. They don't have a problem. They don't
And
pay
we
any
did pretty well
taxes.
as a country before 1913 when it first got imposed, so we could do it again.
We would do great, because the other thing that people don't look at is look at how much an every dollar you spend is the old amount of tax that's been passed on by everybody in the chain of production.
Right.
It can be 20, 15, 20, 25%. Competition is going to bring those prices down. Look at all of the exports that we send to all the countries we trade with have value-added taxes. They take our export, which has all of our government costs included, and they send it overseas, and they add their value-added tax. Now, when they send it back over here, they rebate the value-added tax. So it comes over here at 85%, 80% of what it sells for in their country. And it competes with our products. It's an incredible drag on our economy. And we can't do that because we do not tax the import. We simply say that JCPenney gets this $15 shirt. They sell it for 20. They made 80 cents. We tax the 80 cents. As opposed to taxing all of it under the fair tax, the way it would be done, you know, 23%. So we even up the ground, basically. Right now, we're on a real slope with the foreign exporter here and U.S. exporter way down here. But the consumer actually benefits because everybody has the same level playing field. Jobs are produced here. And then look at one other thing that's so important. There's probably $5 to $20 trillion of, I won't call it all stolen money, but money that's parked offshore, you know, out of Africa, out of our aid programs, out of China, out of Russia, a lot of that money. They're looking for places to invest. Are they going to go to Germany where their investment's going to be taxed at 30%? Are they going to come to the U.S. where their investment's going to be taxed at zero?
That's a no-brainer.
Yep.
I liked on your website, it said, no longer will employers and employees pay the taxes of drug dealers, prostitutes, pimps, and tax cheats. Criminals might not file returns, but they certainly buy things. And with the fair tax enacted, when they do, they will join the rest of us in paying taxes. That's about as simplified as you could possibly get. Biden wants a 44.6% capital gains tax. Right. Seems like a random number out of thin air, but would the highest ever, probably because, you know, Trump 45, he can't go to 45, but would be highest ever passed. Is that just to soak the rich, pandering to the kids in the street on college campuses, or will Chuck Schumer and Mike Johnson actually go along with it?
I don't think Judge's prayer that Johnson will, but Schumer, Schumer is one of the elites. He believes he's smarter than the rest of us, and he thinks that giving him all the money, and he'll decide what he gives back to us. That's that thought process. So obviously he thinks it's right, but in the past, when they've raised capital gain rates, the amount of tax collected went down. Why? Because the people who would have the most capital gains are the people who probably can afford not to sell. Okay? Mm-hmm. They do like Larry Ellis of Oracle. Instead of selling Oracle stock, he borrows against it at a very low rate and uses the borrowed money to buy his yachts and his houses and things like that. He never pays tax. And I guarantee you that Jeff Bezos wouldn't be selling $1 billion worth of his stock or more if it was 44%.
Well, as a matter of fact, you're right. He left Washington State, where they wanted to tax it as a asset tax, and moved to Florida, where you are, and avoided billions of dollars of taxes. So
that's right.
I don't blame him for going where the money is treated best. This Green New Deal is expensive, but was voted down 100-0, maybe 98 with some dead senators unavailable that day. I don't remember, but it was supported by Oregon's Ron Wyden, and he even voted no. Is that the old Beatles song, The Tax Man, If You Breathe, Will Tax That Too?
Yes.
And yeah. Also from that song, now my advice for those who die, declare the pennies on your eyes because I'm a tax man. What are your thoughts on the death tax?
Well, it goes away with the fair tax. We eliminate it totally. And the reason is it collects very little money, but it actually creates a huge cottage industry of people that have to prepare for it. And it primarily affects the family business. the person who's got a business that's going on, he's done quite well. And if you go with what Biden wants to do, which is repeal the Bush exemptions, I mean, excuse me, yeah, Bush and Trump exemptions, which got up to 11 million per spouse or 22 million. He wants to bring it down like Bernie Sanders to under 5 million. And here you've got farms that were purchased 30 years ago for, I'm going to make it up, a million, that are now worth 7, 8, 10 million, a lot of it through inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he wants to tax it, and he wants to tax it at 40%, or at least Sanders does. And then up to 60% over, I forget the number, but over a certain number. So 40% of 5 million is $2 million. Now that family farmer is likely to have trouble finding $2 million. So it's going to have to sell his farm.
Pieces of it, yeah.
Yeah, well, and maybe make it non-productive for him, because it reduces the amount of acreage he has below what he can exist on. Same thing with any other kind of family-owned business. I just think it's stupid thinking to have something you've paid tax on all the way through your life and then have it confiscated, a big chunk of it confiscated from your family prior. Now, the people that are going to get hurt are not the Donald Trumps. They're not the Jeff Bezos. I guarantee you those people have got it set up in ways that will reduce immensely their tax burden, just
sure.
like their income. They don't pay income tax. They don't need to. They're, you know, they're able to structure their life in a way that we can't. I say we. Maybe you're one of them, but basically me. And if that's the case, they're going to pay very little death tax. The guys that are going to pay it are people like you and me.
Right. Student loan debt forgiveness. It's up to $1.6 trillion, I believe. All debts are paid, so it's just a transfer of taxes to deadbeat college grads that shouldn't have taken a loan in the first place, especially in
right.
the majors they graduated with that don't have jobs available to ever pay it back. What is the economic harm a giveaway of Biden's to his base of support like that? What does it do to an economy?
Well, of course, it's a currency of value, because you're going to have that those people who, most of whom were making some payments, not all of them, but many of them, they're going to be able to use that money for other things. But the crazy part of this, we go back to the elites again. Look what happened with those loans. People went to very high expensive colleges and universities, and they borrowed all of this money as an art major, more money than they would make in 5 to 7 years if they got a job. Who did it benefit? Well, it benefited the university. And look at tuition rates and how they've spiraled upwards in the last 15 years. Well, that goes along with student loans, because that money has just been going to the university. The university doesn't care, because the people are not paying for it. They're borrowing the money. And when you're 18 years old, most people don't have any consideration or any idea of what it means to pay it back.
No.
So it's really the elites financing themselves, because that led to higher salaries for themselves. And it led to a larger administrative staff in those universities. If you look at, and it's parallel with student loans. So it's not, we're trying to help the students, no. If they want to try to help the students, they're going to say to Joe over here, Joe, you really need to rethink that. Because if you want to be an art historian, it's wonderful. But here's the range of income you're going to make.
Sure, it would be nice if they tipped into those endowments to pay off those loans instead
well,
of
art. And that's the other issue. They don't want to.
No,
but
why would they?
Yeah, because they can get it from the government. And
well,
a lot of people that have bought into this are expecting to have a lot of it forgiven.
Yeah, we pay more interest than defense, NASA, HUD, and more, as we said. California
right.
is giving away healthcare, homes, college tuition to illegals, the $1 trillion of state debt. They can't print it. That's just our debt now. The rest
right.
of the states are going to get it. How can we have a welfare state and illegal immigration at the same time and pay our bills to foreigners who own our debt with Social Security and Medicare? How is this sustainable much longer?
Only way it has any chance of being sustainable, and it's not going to be sustainable as presently structured, is going to be with economic growth. If we were, use that rule of 72 again, but if we were up there bringing in lots of investment capital so we become more productive, and we went from a 1.6% growth to a 4% growth, we would overcome through just earnings and income in a lot of the debt that we have right now. That's Congress has to change, though. You can't continue to spend more than you take in. But we would be at a point, and there have been some articles on this, where within 10 years, we would cross the line, assuming normal rate of increase of spending based on what we take in, we'll have crossed the line where we're going to start being in surplus if we have that kind of sustainable growth. So it's got to be a combination of factors. It's got to be cutting out a lot of this waste, and a lot of it, quite frankly, is. It's got to be saying, okay, to the immigrants, you're over here without permission. We are not going to fund your health care. We're not going to give you food. We're not going to give you a place to live. We're not going to pay for your kids' education. And if you do that, I think you're going to find, Steve, that no matter how cruel that sounds, you're going to have a lot less immigration. Because a lot of people are coming, like they used to call them anchor babies. A lady would get pregnant and then run through at Tijuana or some of these other places, run through the immigration officer to get across the border, and then they would collapse and have their baby in the US because the baby would become a citizen. And the fact that their baby was a citizen would allow her to become a citizen and her brothers, and, all of this.
Chain
Well, now you
migration
don't
from
even
there,
have
yeah.
that. You just have people showing up and coming in because they believe that our country is so generous that we're going to take care of them in a way that's so much better. Because even in these conditions that many of these people live, it's better than they were at home.
Yeah.
And my heart bleeds for those kids. It really does. I hate to see kids in that condition. But I also don't want to see my kids in that condition, my grandkids. I want to
Yeah.
see all of us prospering. And I think the way to do it is to get government accountable again. If we go to the fair tax, they can't play games. They can't hide things. They can't hide the price of tax in goods we buy. It's all on the table. And that, frankly, is the scariest part of this, the politicians and elites in D.C. Right now, they've got it fragmented. Most people don't realize how much tax they pay in every purchase. They look at their W-2. Well, that's how much I pay. No, that's not how much you pay. That's part of what you paid. Okay? They don't realize that when we calculate our income tax, we've given 7.65% to the payroll tax, but we pay income tax on that 7.65. You see
It's
what
like
I'm saying?
taxing the, yeah, it's like tipping the
So it's
tax
like
at a restaurant, yeah.
8%. It's like
Yeah.
8.2% for most of us. But and they don't you don't see that. They have been very, very good at hiding it. And I used to be on panels a few times with Milton Friedman. And his wife used to, and I had, sat at the same table for lunch, and his wife used to just love to pick him. Because Milton Friedman is the fellow in World War II that suggested withholding as a temporary measure. And she hated it. She tried to get him not to, but he did it anyway. He said, it's only going to be for the war. And so, she was cute. They were both in their, what, 80s or close to 90. Milty, she called him. But that's the situation, though, where you have withholding. Most people think of their income as what they take home. They don't see what the tax they pay in other ways. They don't think about the fact that they pay tax on Social Security. If you ask them what they pay in Social Security tax, they say 7.65%. No, they had to pay an additional amount equal to additional percentage of that additional their tax. If they have a 10% effective rate, they're paying 8.5%.
Sure. And
Okay.
that question I just asked you, how can we have a welfare state and illegal immigration? That came right from Milton Friedman. So that's probably why it rang a bell in your mind.
I saw you smile when I mentioned Friedman. That's I remember that. But you only can do that is if you're productive enough to overcome those costs. And you can if you're growing fast enough to overcome that because you're bringing in more revenue. But more importantly, you're creating so many more well-paying jobs.
We have to grow fast and we have to spend less fast.
That's
That's the
right.
problem. I think we're
But we
spending
have to
faster than we're growing.
spend in accordance with our income.
And if a recession comes, like you said earlier, was predicted by Powell, you can't do that. So economics is called the dismal science for a reason. So
Yes.
I have to ask this. Record homelessness and record amounts of money thrown at the homeless industrial complex. Most of the money is unaccounted for or stolen, the GAO says, with the COVID relief money in the trillions. We're not that far away from that, but the ripple effect, the 6 month lag is still with us. Is this misallocation of spending, let's call it that, the root of inflation? You know, gas up 60%, including gas tax, food up 21%, including grocery tax, houses have doubled with property taxes. Are you for a tax holiday or a tax rebate like George Bush Jr. did at this point to ease the pain?
I think that it is a mistake because it's only going to be financed by more debt. And the
What do you
reason
think?
I say that is because we have so much mandatory spending, the entitlement spending, all of that money for Social Security, government wages, all those things are required. We only have a small percentage of the budget, around 20%, that's discretionary. And in order to make those kind of cuts, I mean, you could cut 8% of the budget by not having a defense budget. Well, that's probably pretty nuts, but you could. You could cut a chunk of it by reducing Social Security payments, cut everybody 20%. You could reduce the budget by cutting Medicare, making people, like if I have a copay with my Medicare Advantage plan, I'm paying $25, make me pay 100. You see what I'm saying? You can do things like that, which will reduce the cost. But historically, in the last 30 years, when that kind of thing has happened, they've just spent more money. They didn't stop and say, oh, thank you. We're going to use that savings to finance the rest of the budget. No,
Like
because
they
if they
called it
would do
a
that,
peace dividend, and then they went and spent 10 times more than that was
that's right.
supposed to be.
Exactly. And that's why Abraham Lincoln said, if you want to repeal a bad law, enforce it strictly.
Once there was a cover of Fortune magazine that had Alan Greenspan, and I think it was Fed when he was with the Fed, and Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan, and another, even Ben Bernanke and others calling them saviors of the world or masters of the universe. That's before aftermath of the bailouts in the early 2000s. Do you think that was the death knell for the U.S. economy, making all our bank zombies like Japan before us in the 90s, when they took their interest rates to zero for 35 years?
I don't think it's the death knell, but I think it certainly started the slide down. I really still believe we can recover because we have the most dynamic economy in the world. We're the safest economy in the world. We have somebody steering the ship that's perhaps heading for a big waterfall, like Niagara Falls, and not good. But I think if we started making some changes, it's not going to happen fast. But if we did it, we could actually right this ship in the next 10 to 12, 15 years and suddenly become people who are thinking like normal people, not elites who have this ethereal idea that because they think it's going to work. It's like, it's funny because I've been to DC a lot. I've talked to some of these people and they say, well, yeah, our computer said that if we raised the tax rate, we would collect this much more money. And we didn't collect it. Why? That doesn't make sense. Well, Obviously, it doesn't to them, but it does to all of us. Because if we're going to give that much more away, we're going to try not to, right?
Yeah.
And either we're going to not make as much, or we're going to have, you know, more money spent on deductions or whatever, but we're not going to pay any more than we have to.
And all right, so, last question for you. I'm almost out of time here. Folks may remember Tennessee Senator, vice presidential candidate, vice president, actually presidential candidate, Al Gore, said to put Social Security in a lockbox, and George Bush said, invest it in the stock market. That actually hurt George W. Bush, I'd say, but it's in the past because it didn't happen. Are those ideas tangible? The returns on the stock market beat money market and treasuries since that election of 2000. Do you have any opinions on that?
The numbers show that it would have been much less of a crisis. In other words, the insolvency coming in 2030 might have still come, but it would probably be in 2045, 2050 if things weren't changed. So 100%. Because again, one of the problems with Social Security and Medicare is that you've got people living longer, but fewer and fewer workers are supporting the people retired through their contributions into the trust fund. So it's not that the earnings wouldn't be higher, they would be, but the amount of money required is going to go dramatically up in the next 10 to 12 years. And you're not going to out earn that because you're not putting in enough. So it's not a solvent universally, but it would have done a huge amount to delay the crisis.
Plus the purchasing power from 10 years ago today is not anywhere near that it was. So it didn't keep up with inflation, as we would say. And anyone that doesn't have a mortgage knows the town they live in really owns their home.
Right.
You know, just stop paying your taxes and see what happens. What if a lot of Americans just quit paying income taxes by either refusing to pay or to simply stop earning? How would we pay out America's debts? Would they just confiscate everything like Stalin did to the Ukrainian farmers?
Well, they can't confiscate everything because there's not enough government bureaucrats. But in 1965, David Bradford, who was at Princeton, who became a good friend of mine, he worked for the government, the Treasury Department. And he told me that the Teamsters were threatening to quit paying taxes. You know, back then it wasn't as regimented as it is now in terms of withholding. And Johnson's staff, the Treasury, ordered him to come up with a plan that if that happened, how could the federal government collect enough revenue to survive? His plan, a national retail sales tax, because people have to spend. And instead of having to collect from 150 million people, you'd be collecting from 10 or 15 million stores. Does that make sense to me?
Is that where you got the idea?
Nope. But I talked to David when I was in D.C. in the 90s. No, I actually got the idea from a man named John Dewey, who wrote some books on how consumption tax, and this was way back in the 30s, you know, coming up, consumption taxes always are better for an economy. And he had lots of reasoning besides the simple ones that I look at, such as you reward people that work, you don't punish them.
He's the one the newspaper said beat. He's the one that the newspaper said beat Truman on election eve, but actually wasn't the case.
Right.
I'd love to talk to you a whole bunch more about Mr. Hayes. We are at the end here, so tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you and follow you on social if you have that.
Well, the best thing is just to go to fairtax.org. That's what I tell people to do. You'll find out a lot of information. We're all volunteers. We're taking your money to help promote fair tax. And so join us, get on our mailing list. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people like you and I, Steve, demanding that members of Congress, who the only control we have is kicking them out of office, demanding that they take responsibility for what they're doing, or we'll replace them. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on with us. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Steve. I enjoyed it as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Southside Soul, whiskey whispering low, little sweet nothing southern. All right, Steve, I know you don't make enough money to pay any taxes, but what did you think of our little economic story there?
I had a couple questions, Steve. I want to learn how to borrow
I'm not a
against.
CPA.
I want to learn how to borrow against my money, my own portfolio, let's say stock market portfolio, and I'm also looking into foundations to protect a family farm of my in-laws. And I am actually on this process of trying to figure out how to become or act like the uber wealthy because they protect all their assets. And so we have to. And I'm like, can you imagine, Steve, if they got a 40% or a 20% on the value of your house?
I know it's going to be
That
devastating.
is incredibly evil. He
I
just
saw
uses
people
very.
having to load up their houses and move when I was in Bellevue. I've told the story before because the big mansions built up all around them, and the family house that she inherited, she could not afford the taxes. She could afford to live in Bellevue at the time, but not the taxes. So we
No.
can do a whole nother show on that another time, but thank you for that. I think we're like into super overtime, so I'm just going to go through this real quick. Democratic states earmarked over $500 million in COVID-19 aid to help illegal immigrants. Several Democratic states and cities have given more than $500 million, that's half a billion people, of COVID-19 relief funds to illegal immigrants. Most of the $517 million went to cash payments for immigrants in states including Washington, Illinois, and New Jersey, and were drawn from the $1.9 trillion federal COVID-19 relief package, the American Rescue Plan, according to Fox News. This means the Biden administration directly subsidized undocumented immigration under the guise of COVID-19 pandemic relief, according to a recent report from the Economic Policy Innovation Center on the funds in Washington State. Washington State was the largest contributor and gave cash payments of $3,075 to more than 100,000 undocumented immigrants, according to the 2023 report from the Department of Social and Health Services. The state gave a total of $340 million in ARP funding to the immigrants. No wonder you want to shelter some of your tax money. The COVID-19 Immigrant Relief Fund was highly publicized and repeatedly funded by the legislature. Mike Falk, a spokesman for Governor Jay Inslee, the devil Democrat Washington, told Fox News it ran from 2020 to 2023. Folk would do well to familiarize themselves with the folks, not folk, would do well to familiarize themselves with the disparate health impact that faces communities of color and immigrants during the pandemic. All Washingtonians were impacted by COVID, regardless of where they came from, and our state was proud to help us, many of our residents, as possible during an unprecedented disaster, he said. The Illinois state government allocated $71.8 million in ARP funds for cash payments to illegal immigrants, and Chicago marked $14.1 million for immigrants. An advertisement for the Chicago program even noted that no questions will be asked in regards to citizenship or immigrant status of applicants. New Jersey marked $60 million of the state's ARP funds to go to illegal immigrants, including cash payments worth $2,000 per person or up to $4,000 for each household. The payments went to thousands of recipients, and only those considered excluded residents qualified. Only considered excluded
Holy.
residents qualified. The term excluded referred to undocumented individuals, residents re-entering from the justice system, and other individuals otherwise excluded from pandemic-related financial help, according to the state government. Boston, Denver, and Washington, D.C. have designated millions of ARP dollars to help with their immigrant surges as well. D.C., which has been a major influx of asylum seekers, earmarked $26 million to help with the crisis. That's not a state, by the way, folks. That's directly your money. The U.S.
Yes.
southern border has experienced historic crossings over the past 2 years, with the first quarter of fiscal 2024 reaching 785,000 encounters, the highest number ever recorded. Because socialists are dumber than ever, you all should hear this. Between Phil Donahue, dummy, and Milton Friedman, brilliant economist we just talked about, just ask him. Clip number one.
Well, the maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, when you see so few haves and so many have-nots, when you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether
Dummy.
greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy. The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. And this from ESPN, owned by Disney. NAIA essentially bans transgender athletes from women's sports. April 8th, 2024, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics, the governing body for mostly small colleges, announced a policy Monday that all but bans transgender athletes from competing in women's sports. The NAIA Council of Presidents, by the way, that's who ran the Greater Seattle Summer Swim League, for those of you who have been following me since the beginning, approved the policy in a 20-0 vote. Mm-hmm. The NAIA, which oversees some 83,000 athletes at schools across the country, is believed to be the first college sports organization to take such a step. According to the transgender participation policy, all athletes may participate in NAIA-sponsored male sports, but only athletes whose biological sex assigned at birth is female and who have not begun hormone therapy will be allowed to participate in women's sports.
Good.
A student who has begun hormone therapy may participate in activities such as workouts, practices, and team activities, but not in interscholastic competition. Amen. NAIA programs in competitive cheer and competitive dance are open to all students. Yay. The NAIA policy notes every other sport includes some combination of strength, speed, and stamina, providing competitive advantages for male student athletes. They've never seen a cheerleading competition, apparently. NAIA president and CEO Jim Carr said in an interview with the Associated Press, he understands the policy will generate controversy, but that it was deemed best for member schools for competitive reasons.
Right on.
Quote, we know there are a lot of opinions and a lot of people have a very emotional reaction to this, and we want to be respectful of all that, Carr said, but we feel like our primary responsibility is fairness and competition, so we are following that path, and we've tried as best we could to allow for some participation by all. The NAIA's 2023-24 policy did not bar transgender and non-binary athletes from competing in the division of their choice in the regular season. In the postseason, and with some exceptions for those who have had hormone therapy, athletes had to compete in the division of their birth sex. There are some 15.3 million public high school students in the United States, and a 2019 study by the CDC estimated 1.8% of them, about 275,000, I don't believe it, are transgender. The number of athletes within that group is much smaller. A 2017 survey by Human Rights Campaign suggested fewer than 15% of all transgender boys and transgender girls play sports. The number of NAIA transgender athletes would be far smaller. Ah, Riley Gaines. We knew her here before she was huge, episode 89. Congratulations on her continued, it must be thankless, her continued fight for women. Good job, lady. The Joe Rogan Experience, the most listened to podcast in the U.S., which is estimated to bring in 11 million listeners per episode. The top 10 most watched episodes of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast on YouTube account for around 368 million views. I've got to do better, but let's hear Riley and her Joe Rogan Experience.
In Israel this week, but little-known podcaster Joe Rogan, well, I think this guy is going to make it.
At this national championships, right, this national championships where we had Leah Thomas, who is a male, a man, identifying, self-identifying as a woman, we were told we fully had to treat this person as a woman, right? This same national championships, we had another athlete who was transitioning. But this athlete is a female who was then self-identifying as a man. From Yale, Izzy, now goes by the name of Isaac. And we were told we fully had to treat this person as a man. Optics purposes here, to give you perspective of what this looked like from our eyes. Okay, finals of the 100 freestyle. Top 8 women in the entire nation.
Air quotes women.
Air quotes women. Yeah, for those that don't have video, air quotes women. Top eight women in the entire country. And you've got a 6'4" man in a women's swimsuit with a bulge next to a woman wearing only a Speedo with nothing covering her top. Your reaction was my reaction. So I'm sitting there watching this. I'm thinking to myself, it's me. I'm the crazy one. It must be. This is the freaking Twilight Zone. Really what had thrusted me over the edge into no longer being willing to lie, ultimately, is he and I raced in the 200 freestyle. This is the day after he swam the 500 freestyle and won a national title, beat out Olympians, beat out American record holders, right? Keep in mind, these aren't scrubs. They're the most impressive and accomplished female swimmers this world has ever seen. And again, he beat them all by body lengths. 1 second might not sound like a lot of time, but
right.
In the sport of swimming,
stop
again,
that because Joe goes for 3 hours, and I don't think we want to let that all run. So stay tuned for my last quotes of this week and a little George Strait. Time for my quotes for the day. Before I share, I want to remind everyone yet again to subscribe to heartlandjournal.com, and you can join the conversation at Heartland Journal on Twitter. I'm on there probably more than I should be. The hardest thing in the world to understand is the income tax. Albert Einstein. 99% of people get their taxes done on time. Finally, I'm in the 1%. I'm so glad I learned about parallelograms instead of how to do taxes. That will come in handy this parallelogram season. It's a nice feeling to get your tax refund until you realize it was your money in the first place. Who got their tax refund back? Call me. I miss hanging out. Every year I make the same mistake on my taxes. I try doing them myself. Taxes are a fine for doing well. Tax season just flew by, said no CPA ever. Two things are unavoidable in this world, death and taxes. I didn't make that one up. I believe we should all pay our taxes with a smile. I tried, but they wanted cash. Tax question, can I claim the voices in my head as dependents? How do you a social security number for a dog? I don't even know what that means. Forget that. Asking for a friend, it says. IRS. Income removal service.
Yes.
Number 14, dear IRS, I'm writing to cancel my subscription. Please remove my name from your mailing list. The best things in life are free until the government finds a way to tax them. Number 16, I'm spending the year dead for tax reasons. Those are the top 16 funniest tax quotes I could find, and they're not necessarily put to anybody in particular. That is it for this episode. Thank you, Steve Hayes, for helping us keep more of what we make and reminding us in the Reagan years, the top rate was 90%. We're lucky Dems have short memories and have us at under 40% today. This is goodbye for now. I'm your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com. Clicks are happening. Go there. Check it out. It is getting to be a thing. And we'll see you all next week. Peace in our time and definitely glory to God. I am going to see the premiere of the Irwin Brothers' new film, Unsung Heroes, in about 15 minutes on the red carpet tonight. That's a Franklin, Tennessee production. So looking forward to seeing the team behind the Jesus Revolutions movie, their newest in my own hometown, about the King and Country music pop duo's mom. I'll let you know how it went next week. So let's go out with their song, For God Is With Us, because he is. God is like oxygen, and you can't see him, but you can't live without him.
Yeah, I've been dreaming of the wild,
this ain't it.
Oh, you'll have it. Don't worry. It's coming in. Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.
From the heart.
dare to believe in a true love that gave us a brand new beginning. No room for a king, no celebration and no ceremony. In that little town, no nobody would think this is the story of the coming.